I just the younger the employees, the more eager they are, and like the fresh out of college, couple years out in their 20s, they're asking for more. They want to do more.
Stalls. First up, remember this code, Hustler20. Why? Because that gets you 20% off your next DTF transfer order. If you're ready to take your custom apparel to the next level, Stalls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand that's scaling, Stalls makes the hustle easy. I think maybe just as important, they do a lot of really cool in-person events. I know they just hosted another print-on-demand event. There are a lot of that Screen Print Mag said was sold out, and they tour the SF1 facility. So really, really cool to learn and meet a ton of people in your similar space. So you check them out. Go to the website and check out those events and products.
Sweet. Bruce, if you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, you can hit up GraphicSource. GraphicSource offers industry-leading outsource options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management software when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, back office, and customer service. There's no better company in our industry to work with. They have over 40 years in the game, and they really understand shop needs. They have a proven track record of success. You can hit up graphicsource.com and you can let them know it's your first time working with them. They'll give you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order. What's cool is we just scaled up a couple artists from GraphicSource because we're getting busy, so they can ramp and scale with you. Thanks so much, GraphicSource. We really appreciate you.
That's actually really cool. Easy Way. Easy Way is launching. Actually, they're not launching. They've had this program, but you need to make sure to put in your email because they are giving away $250 product credit every single month. And why not easy snag to be able to get it? Easy Way's monthly giveaway is to their amazing customers. You go to easyway.com/giveaway. Easy Way makes reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, and equipment. So check them out. Not only that, they've got a ton of great resources. The team is incredible to be able to help you. Incredible products and distributors as well. They work with like 100 plus different distribution channels. So really, really big, awesome company. I saw you commented too, Steven, on your favorite chemicals.
701, 842. Let's go.
All right. We'll jump on in. Part two. We wanted to have you back. To be honest, can't remember where we ended on the last one. I have a couple.
I think I was making fun of your background. I think.
Actually, how's your week been? How was last week?
For me, it just kind of blends together at this point. I'd say it was a normal week. How's that?
My business partner is a lot older. He goes, if everyone can just give me 80% every day, I'm happy. Just give me 80%.
Dude, I have thought a lot about that. You know, that's one of the things that have stuck with me the most of, you know, Stephen Farrig's business war chest is take someone out to lunch, you know, as much as you can, just different people and kind of build relationships that way. And then if you get 80%, you're winning.
I don't know what that says about most people if 80% is winning.
Dude, it's because the reality is you're going to, it's like a bell curve, right? Like it's, your A players are like at the beginning of the bell curve, and maybe that's like 15%. Then the bell curve, the most people are probably around those B-ish, you know, players. Like they get it done, sometimes they go extra, but like they're good, you know, you want to keep them. And then at the bottom is their end of the bell curve, which is like C players and below, which you're like hesitant to replace, you don't want to, the rehiring sucks, like I don't want to deal with it type thing. So if you get 80% of that big bulk of the majority of folks there, I think it's a win too. I mean, do you disagree, Jared?
How many C players do you think you got over there? What percent?
I'm not in the day-to-day anymore. I would say back when I was running in, we were about 30. The C players were probably, I would say, yeah, 10, 15%. And then I would say the Bs were a good chunk, maybe 60%. And then the As were like 15. I got lucky, maybe 15, maybe 20%. something like that. That probably doesn't add up to 100, but...
Do the C players just know that they're going to be average and are okay with it?
No, I don't think people think like that.
Yeah, because I don't think, like, they have self... what do you call it? Self...
Awareness?
Self-awareness, yeah.
But hold on a second. Like, okay, I had really strict parents. I got really, really good grades. That was the only option. Like, right? Bruce was a brain. Jared, I don't know if you were or not.
It was a good B plus, A minus.
We were good kinda. B plus. We didn't get B's in our household, you know, it was, and so like, I just couldn't fathom or understand a person that was like, oh, I'm happy with C's and B's, you know? And it's like, wait, isn't that actually the majority of people? And in a company, are people okay finding a job and just kind of putting it on autopilot and cruise control and being like, yeah, whatever.
I don't think I've looked at it in terms of the actual like employee's perspective in a long time, because I always just like put it onto us and leadership. And I go, no, like either somebody's like really bad or they're in a really bad place. So at the moment they're really bad, or it's 100% on the system and the infrastructure and the leadership and the style and how they're like cultivating the culture in the department or whatever. Like, I don't even look and go, oh, that person is lazy. I go, we're either doing it right and they're good, or there's just, it's them. It is 100% them. I don't look at people and go, this person's okay with mediocrity. I think it's like, we're okay allowing them to be mediocre.
But you still have them, like they're still on the bell curve.
No, I know. I'm just thinking, I mean, you know, do as I say, not as I do, I guess.
I actually think you need B players for two reasons. Number one, you can't all have A players. It's just not possible. A, you can't afford it. Like you need, you know, a crazy big budget, because A players also can demand good salary from other companies. And then I think B is you run into promotion problems. Like logistically, A players are always hungry for the next thing, for the next thing, for the next thing. Whereas I think B tend to be a little bit more like, I can nail this. I'm happier here. I don't need to like crave the next thing and like keep pushing the envelope and look for the next title, or I'm out every single year. So yeah, I don't think it's bad.
I think to Bruce's point, there some of your best employees are the ones that do average work, don't ask for crazy promotions, are maybe a little bit quieter, and just come and do their job. And like, their work isn't their life isn't their work, and they do a fine job, and they don't, you know, it's just kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, they're not thinking about it, you know, and texting you about it at 9 o'clock about some issue or something that they kept working on or figuring out or something like that, too.
Yeah, it's always hard for me to relate to, as like an entrepreneur, like when you kind of like live to work. Like my wife is like not like that, right? Like she works, you know, she does her jobs, you know, whatever. She's gone, has a career as a graphic designer. She's done her whole thing. But like, she doesn't think the way I do about stuff. You know, and so I think my perspective on the whole thing is completely warped, like in a weird way. But I suppose it's like that with all of us in a way, you know. But I agree. I mean, we certainly have people where like we try to give more responsibility and they don't want it. And part of me, it's a struggle for me to like think about those situations, you know.
Totally. It's confusing. It's kind of like,
well, because I'm like, oh God, they hate it here. I don't know where my head goes spinning, you know. And but I know it's not that. I've spent enough time, you know, with chatbots, like dealing with this stuff.
Is it fair to say that most employees don't have an entrepreneur mindset? So like the majority of employees will settle and find comfort over being uncomfortable. And like the minority of employees or a small subset will continue to feel uncomfortable, push the status quo, want more, be super hungry. But the majority of people want comfort.
I don't know. I think it depends on the person. I know I can tell you based on like reviewing budgets and raise increase requests and stuff, like it doesn't seem like there's a lot of like very generally comfortable people based on a lot of coaching that we do. I don't mean that like they're not comfortable here. I just mean like they always want more. Like I can't relate to, let's say, the title thing that Bruce is talking about, right? Because here, you know, at a certain level in each department, there's only so much going on. So like, unless you're in sales, like there is a limit on certain things, not cost. Obviously there's there's natural increase of being here over a certain amount of time, you know, but I always would describe it to people. I'd be like, listen, this is an entourage. You start in the mailroom, then you're an assistant, and then you're an agent, a junior agent. Then you're there. Like, that structure doesn't exist here in like a path that always is available to you. The opportunities would just kind of, if it's available and you have the skill set and you're that person, you 100% are considered for this stuff, you know? But like, we don't have people grabbing titles because it's not like, it's not really a thing here anyway.
Bruce and Jared, do titles annoy you? Or do you think they're important?
I have had plenty of people where I find out their titles on LinkedIn. I go, oh, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know that's what you were.
Oh, people make up titles now? I didn't realize
I gave you that.
I didn't know that was a thing. Maybe, I mean, clearly.
There is a small subset of people that are really obsessed with titles. And then, you know, if you don't give them one, they will make it.
Oh, they're always directors. Everyone's a director, man. Everyone's a director.
I will say on the flip side is it gives, like, it makes someone feel good. And if they perform, I'm like, I don't really care. I think the problem tends to come in a little bit where people start comparing internally. So if you've got, you know, other folks and they're like, wait, how are they this? Then that's where I think you have issues. But like, can you, how have you broken out titles, Jared, so that there is a bit of progression? So for example, we, in software engineering, we broke it into like junior software engineer, senior software engineer. And under three of those buckets, there were three different, call it steps to the ladder. And that was junior 1, 2, 3. Then it's, you know, mid-level 1, 2, 3. Then it's senior 1, 2, 3. And that way it spread out this time for me to make it way easier. And we put a description to each of those. So there's like a, hey, this is what you'd be responsible for. This is what you get good at. So it's very transparent to someone to help them feel like they're progressing. But like, have you done something like that?
I think there's way fewer steps in a lot of these things. So let's talk about account services, right? Sales department or whatever, right? It's kind of like some people will start on their path as an account manager and then like helping maybe some of the top reps and then, or a single top rep, and then they become somebody who is wanting to do sales themselves. So then they become like a sales rep, or sometimes if it's more, they're more music oriented, we call them like A&R, you know? And then it's like senior account managers come after, like if they've been here a long time and they're account manager, you know? So like, there's not that many levels, and in production, it's more based on the role you're filling. So like, we don't have, let's say, you know, like senior press ops, like it doesn't, like, that's not really a distinction we try to make, but we do have people who've been senior in production, let's say, and they kind of turn into like floor leads, but that's not a guaranteed role for anyone who's been printing for that long. You have to be the right person. So I think we're a bad example in that way. And then I don't think fulfillment, it's more just the task you do.
An account manager roles like, hey, I'm looking for more responsibility. What's next? Has that happened? And what do you do then?
Well, listen, in a dream world, everyone who helped a sales rep as an account manager matures, professionally, becomes experienced enough, learns enough, and goes, hey, now I'm going to bring in business. That's not really how it works, because not everyone thinks that way. Not everyone works that way. And luck doesn't really always shake out that way for people. So like with those, like we have opportunities where that people can mentor others, or they can like kind of semi mentor the whole department and work with my sales coordinator who kind of handles all the diffusing of all the chaos in the sales department and help give attention to others. But again, that's not a track that's always going to exist for every single person. So usually I would imagine it is more of a money thing in that scenario. Because when was the last time you guys had somebody come to you going, you know, I just really want more responsibility? Like, that's the focus of what I'm asking for. Not, I want more compensation, you know?
I just, the younger the employees, the more eager they are. And like the fresh out of college, couple years out in their 20s, they're asking for more. They want to do more. And I had an individual, and he goes, I want to do more. I go, why don't we start with coming to work on time?
Well, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. I want to. I assume, I've obviously not watched every episode of your podcast. How many people have you given the example of somebody coming in going, I need to make more money. And let's say they're paid hourly and you go, okay, well, you work like you only work like 30 hours. Why don't you work 40? Well, no, I can't do that. And it's like, so what are we doing here? Like, but I don't want to sound like some curmudgeon, you know, person, like an old guy or whatever, but I'm like, I don't know, like it, but things have shifted, you know, and I guess that's okay now.
Do you have like an internal scoring system? Bruce, I'm curious to hear this. Like, I think an employee either has it or they don't. It's like a one or a zero. You got it or you don't. And if you got it, you're getting pulled in the room. If you don't, you're not pulled in the room. Do you guys have like a internal, like how you think about things?
You know, it's very interesting that you say that because my gut reaction was no. But when you explained what that was, I said, absolutely. Because there are definitely people that you pull in to help make better decisions. And there's others that you're like, eh.
Or if you're going to pull them in, they're like, you're like, if you have to sigh, like, yes, but someone else needs to help them with this. Yes, but. So I guess there's like that yes, but.
We've had the get it, like they get it, is definitely a vocabulary we use here, you know? And at least on the inside roles, like the office jobs, right? I can't speak for my production manager on how he screens people and thinks about it from that end on a more like the more physical roles, you know, but do they get it? Could we see them being lifers is kind of how a word I use a lot. And you know, when you see a lifer leave, that's always like depressing to me, you know, like, and I'll say that to them when they're leaving, like, oh man, I thought you were a lifer. And then I think about what that sounds like to somebody who doesn't own the company. It sounds more like a prison.
It's the worst getting a text too from them at a random time. It's like, hey, do you have 2 minutes to talk?
No, close my door and go, hey, got a sec? And I'm like, oh my God, here we go. It's going down.
Okay, I'm going to ask a question. This was in my Fabric group the other day. What is something that you have been tolerating for the last couple of months in your business?
Lack of maintenance on SOP, procedure, documentation, follow through on things, which is why I took the last week to literally build my own knowledge base app like myself. And it's like, actually, I was just working on it when you guys were keeping me waiting for 3 minutes. I was continuing work on it. But I'd say that because you put all this energy into this stuff and then it's like to watch people not see it through or update things really has been driving me crazy to the point where I'm like, oh, I'm not going to pay per seat for Notion. I'm just going to build my own because I need all these other things.
So how long? Okay. So like there are things that happen in my, you know, I travel a lot. And I'll come back and forth between Champaign and Chicago and I'll see the same thing. And I'll be like, dude, I saw this 2 weeks ago. Can someone fucking move these boxes? You know, my business partner will hide $100 under it and say, I'll get it at Christmas.
Jed is the best. Jed and Dave Ramsey, man. I'll tell you what.
Little sayings.
Yes. Jed and Dave Ramsey.
I'll tape $100 to the bottom of it and we'll make someone rich by Christmas. It's almost to the point where it's like you say something and then you leave and you hope it gets done and then you come back. At that point, if you have given someone instructions to do something and they don't, do you, Jared, just everyone get out of the way? Like, I'm just going to rebuild this? Or when you say the word tolerating, you were just like, there's just been some apathy about it in the organization?
With a question like that, I'm very careful because last time we spoke, I was like, you know, I overshare on these things. So I got to be careful about what specific things. So obviously there's sensitive things I don't want to get into. Right. But like it could be, you know, all of our record label dudes and come back and there's just pallets of stuff from this festivals and it's just sitting out on the floor. And I'm like, I get it. You came in at night. I get it. You're tired. But like people are here every day. You need to show it respect and not just leave this shit out. Like, let's go, you know, stuff like that will drive me crazy. And then I don't go out there and sometimes I go out there and do it myself. And then, you know, it's like 2000% humidity. I'm like soaking wet and I make it a point to go talk to him like, hey, I just cleaned up all your stuff. Or I'm out on the floor and there's a bunch of vinyl records covering all this furniture. And I'm like, I need these newly trained people to be put at a multiple desk side to side. I just start moving stuff and throwing it away because I'm just so mad.
Hurricane Jared.
Oh, dude, for sure. There's been times.
But does
that
make any change, or is that for
you?
Well,
in the moment, it surely does.
Does that make them just feel like shit?
I don't know. I don't get into it. Because, like, I can't...
Or does that say, oh, well, Jared will come back and do it if it gets bad enough?
I don't think they think like that. I just think it's the same as, like, are people, like, okay with mediocrity? Like, no, they're just doing their thing, man. Like, everyone's just doing their thing with their own priorities. But I do think in the moment they probably feel shame, I would hope.
On that example, then, the thing that you're trying to build to enforce the SOPs, how are you going to... What's the game plan?
Well, the real question is... Is the thing that's irritating me solved by having a different piece of software? And the answer is no, it's not going to force people to update anything, but it's making it where it's all in one place so I can see what the hell's going on. So, for example, nothing I'm building, I'm building just a basic knowledge base, okay? And with maybe a phase two idea of some way to just kind of chat with it, but instead of it summarizing articles and steps, because that's where it can get dangerous with AI, I have it just pulling snippets it recommends and stuff like that. But my issue was, I don't want to pay for a bunch of seats. I don't want it open to the world. I needed it IP address gated, so production people who don't have emails can view certain things and I can give permission based on where they are. Same with my fulfillment warehouse down the road. And I'm like, this is too hard to figure out. Google Sites sucks. You know, Google Docs sucks. I don't want all these people out in the warehouse scanning QR codes and typing in a generically shared Google account, which was our solution before. So I'm like, now things have gotten to the point where in an evening, I built the framework for the whole thing. And now fine tuning it an hour here and there throughout the next week, this thing is like awesome.
Is the problem that people don't scan it, or the problem that they know what it is, but just...
I think my problem is most of the stuff doesn't change, and that's fine. But the amount of, you know, the tribal knowledge, the verbal stuff that's happening, I'm hearing it in my office. I hear it across the hallway. I hear it and I go, we need to put this in a central place. But then I don't harp on people because I'm like, they're just going to put it in their place or worse in their head. And then they say it's all up here, you know? So I'm like, if I can have a thing that does exactly what I want and I can watch it, I can have my own side of it that sends me a report saying none of these things have been viewed in however long, or this hasn't been reviewed, or yesterday I was saying, man, I could like almost like an inventory cycle count where it's just you do one thing every day, just forever, always. I could be like, send the manager a thing, one thing a day saying, is this accurate? Or a week, hey, is this post accurate? I can automate that instead of making them do it and or hoping that they do it. But really what's going to happen, I can hear it as I'm saying it. It's just going to build this thing. And yes, it'll all be in one place, but it will be updated when they have time to update it. And if they're motivated to update it, because I can send a bunch of emails at people. It's not going to, you know, necessarily change anything. Just kidding. Like, you saw the wind come out of my sails as it hit me there, you know, but
you end up going in the back and just doing it yourself again.
Dude, it's the same thing. Like I was mentioning, like I built this like agent for myself to like resurface all these like things, like I was like this resurfacing like emails and stuff where it isn't, Gmail didn't pick it up because it, you know, it didn't say, hey, nobody heard back from you or whatever, or you didn't hear from them. And it sends me messages through Google Chat, which is really cool to an extent. But then I just kind of blow it off and ignore it because there's a reason those things got deprioritized in the first place. So it's like a bigger problem, you know? And I think that's what I worry about when we're building all these tools is like, I don't want to build something for the sake of building something cool. And for me, I like building. So it's kind of like, you got to be careful.
I'm really curious on a lot of this employee stuff is like, how do you get them to be builders? Because when you get them to build, they take more ownership of it. When they take more ownership of it, they want to lead with it. Because whether you're using Notion or Asana or whatever, like it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. I guess, Jared, how have you tried to get your team on board with some of the stuff that you build? Like, do they build alongside you? What's that like?
The knowledge base is a good example where they probably all don't care. Because they're like, I have what I need to train my people. I don't really care. So it's more about, that's more of like an organization thing for me to like exercise control in an environment that I feel needs some control. Everything else we build is solving a major problem for people. Like our sales dashboard is really fun and they live in it and it shows them the information and what their sales are and how are they doing with their goals. And there's a little 8-bit avatar that they get to design and all that fun stuff is what I do to try to get them engaged. But the sparkle wears off after a little while. Then you talk about the pricing calculator. Well, they love this instead of doing a Google sheet and like, you know, it's giving them way more information, more flexibility, and it's showing them in real time. It's giving them little tools. So things that make their life better on a sales side is easy. Production, like the production scheduler we just built, I mean, they love it because our system was built to schedule by design, not by placement, which is like insane at our size. Like you have to be able to, you know, it's like when you guys created the power scheduler for Printavo or whatever. We literally were like trying to convince ourselves to switch to Printavo. It was just too difficult. There was too many things that didn't work for us. So we built this thing that layers over all of it. And we worked with our production manager and the guy who schedules and the floor lead, like the floor manager, to kind of like really make sure we understood what worked. We had stuff from from Ryan Kasparian, like his manual, like tracker sheet that we had been using, which was at the time it was great, but eventually now it's very low tech, right? So we built all that stuff ourselves. So everyone's really happy to do it. One, because it's easier than what they're doing before. And two, because my production manager is happy because it gives him insights into all this stuff. Now he can really see. I just literally provisioned 7 Samsung Galaxy tablets or whatever and put a little arm and it's on every press now and they run their little timer and they can see where these shirts go next, which seems like common sense, but like they didn't know that before. There was a lot of like, wait, who's doing the backs? Like what's going on? Because we didn't have the software to do it. And now we do. So in those cases, it's awesome. My sales reps like it when Robert builds a store's storage system that shows how bad storage is for e-com and we have to start charging or getting rid of stuff. I'm pretty sure they don't love that app, you know, but we need it. And eventually it'll be part of the language. And eventually we'll consolidate a lot of this stuff into a single place.
Are you starting to see the payoff on all of these financially? Or is this just stroking your ego?
I'm so good at building. It's out of control. What I think is on the production side specifically, the efficiencies that we want, that we've been talking about for like 3 years, were not realistic to obtain until we gave them a tool to track these things easily. So now that they can do the scheduling the way they should be, and they were doing it manually before. It was just crazy, you know? So now it's a lot more manageable. Now we can start holding people a little bit more accountable and they can start owning it. They know what's going on. So I think while we haven't done the math, we know it's well on its way there. It's helping us because now we have the physical restrictions are stopped too. Staging is a lot easier because it's a lot more clear what's coming next. And, you know, it's not like it was a free-for-all before, but like it was not, look at this tablet and it shows exactly what's happening. There was a lot of shuffling things because things would go wrong. So
what changing directions a little bit, what do you feel like what worries you either about the business or industry kind of customer related?
The clients who manipulate on the AR side. And that one really worries me because when you know, we talked about this a little bit last time, where you have when you have a larger sales team and everyone's client, certain clients are priorities to different people, and you have very relationship based stuff, and then you have lots of people down the line who are afraid. You have management over there who's afraid. You have assistant management who's afraid. Then you have the rep who's like perpetuating this fear of no, we can't because whatever, it's just going to come. That is very, very stressful. And it's, you know, you're kind of in a thankless job in a lot of ways, you know, here. So you're printing, doing what you're supposed to do, but it's hard, man. It's hard to carry stuff 90 days. Like,
what do you do about it? Or how do you manage that?
I would say
you pull on a credit line, or are you just very manual?
It's all the time. So it just becomes part of our operation. So really it's more like you just apply pressure to reps. You know, when I hired our AR person, you know, she'd been doing it forever. And I was like, okay, so you're not somebody who like gets, you know, upset or depressed about a thankless, endless, no brick wall job, right? Because she goes, dude, I've been dealing with this forever. I used to collect from truckers. Like, it's fine, right? But even still, that's 3 years ago. she has her days where you're like, oh my God, I think she's going to quit.
How does someone like that in their role, like, what does that look like? Is it literally just going down a list? And
it is a lot of talking. No, because we don't allow certain escalations without the sales rep getting just as frustrated, you know, their supervisor being like, yeah, okay, we need to escalate this now. So there's like steps, you know? So it's not like, dude, the amount of stuff I've sent to collections over the years, it's a waste of time because nobody ever pays. So it's like, it's very strange. I mean, don't get me wrong. Most people do pay, and there are certainly people who milk the system, but when it comes to the stuff that stresses me out, that's the stuff that stresses me out because that affects everything. Because if you're flush, nothing is as bad as it is, you know, but when you're strapped, that's when you have like a major pressure on everything.
So what is a dedicated account receivables person? Like, what does their day look like?
It's not just accounts receivable. So it's a lot of managing commission logging and making sure all that is tracked correctly for our sales reps too. Shipping audits, making sure things were charged correctly. And which again, will be automated soon, which will be nice for her. But I think it's a lot of talking and finding out stories, you know, because if everyone did the right thing, that job would just be send out automated invoices, you know, but it's not. It's wait, oh, this is what's going on. So it's tons of stories, tons of begging, like to internally even just like asking like, hey, what's up? Tons of following up. Hey, you said you're going to do this. What's the deal? Or, oh, who approved that plan? And somebody going, I didn't approve that plan. And you're going, well, then why are we having this conversation? Somebody said something, you know? So it's a lot of reverse engineering.
Do you do that too, Steven? Do you have this or no?
Yeah, I let Watson deal with it. I don't mess with it. I mean, we at any given point, we could have close to $1 million in AR. If it's not managed properly, it could spin us out. And so like Watson has basically good accounts receivables and bad accounts receivable.
Watson is Steven's CFO.
It's our CFO. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to do this without him. But he's got like buckets of like, that's good AR. They're going to pay. They're fine. This is bad AR. We need to collect that fast. Where it's like these bigger companies that are like 90 days. He's like, they're going to pay us at day 89 and that's it, you know? But then it's like, it's the death by 1,000 paper cuts. I feel like it's the $1,000 there. It's the $2,000 there. It's the, oh, we gave that away for this or that. And I'm like, wait, there's 50 grand.
Who just texted me? Gorilla Joe texted me or somebody and was like, we were talking about something after the episode came out. And he said something about, we were talking about chasing money or whatever. And I was like, dude, if everyone who owed me $1,000 paid me, oh my God, do you know how much money I would have? Like, it would be insane. Your perspective on it all is so warped because I go, oh my God, this person owes 500,000 or 200 or 150 or 80. You're like, oh my God, because you got, you know, it's just, it's incredibly, to me, it is incredibly stressful. And because there's so many players involved, even before it gets to the client. And then like, I know my mentality, I know how I handle business, but I can't be the sales rep for every single account. I can't be them. So you have to train them, but not everyone has it in their blood to be a business owner and think and execute like a business owner, to see these traps that clients lay and fix them or whatever, you know? And again, it's not all the clients. There's just some where it's the same game and it is exhausting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Are there any other, actually, what do you think is the best role that you've hired for in the last year?
I'll answer it in a roundabout way. So we have some positions that have naturally just been created. So last summer, our in-house software guy left, which a lot of what he had been doing at that point was a ton of Shopify related stuff. So obviously we replaced him, his tasks on that front with more of an e-commerce coordinator role, which isn't about adding or editing products. It's just setups and configuration of like 100 something Shopify stores at a high level. So we have account managers who do all of the product ads, store edits, you know, that kind of inventory stuff, which is totally separate. So that was a really interesting one because it allowed Robert to have somebody watching the storage and give him a little bit of like breathing room to like have somebody else following up and holding him accountable for some of these things. So that led him to building the app that does the storage evaluations and stuff. And then in account management on the sales side, we had somebody who, you know, as somebody looking for more opportunities, right? More responsibility, this person had all the showings of somebody who could be a great teacher to other people and is like almost like the, like a great example of somebody who can handle pressure, can teach people like the right way to do things. Everyone respects this person. And then we kind of made somebody who's more of a mentor to other account managers, which allows it to be not something where the only care they're getting is putting out fires from their manager. It's somebody who's actually motivated to do that day-to-day account training, as opposed to just, I manage the salespeople and the account managers, and I'm just dealing with problems left and right, which is what my sales coordinator had to do. So those are newer positions. So we didn't like hire for them per se, but there are new roles that kind of appeared. And I think they're like signs of change in the company.
And you promoted from within then on those?
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice.
Well, the e-commerce coordinator was an outside hire.
That one was, but the sales coordinator one.
Yeah. Yeah. He's more of like a senior account manager kind of guy, but yeah. Yeah. And that's, we're still new on that. And just doing that, just like exploring those new roles, right? It created me doing a deep dive into like certain problems we had, or like it was a solution to a problem that was happening in real time. We're like, how are we pairing these account managers with sales reps who aren't trained to have people working for them? They're not trained delegators. They don't know what they're doing. And then everyone starts getting mad at each other, but not to each other, you know? So we end up doing this, and we get somebody in who can actually care about this assessment checklist I came up with and can actually see this timeline through, because the bandwidth wasn't there. We would all have the bandwidth if the AR problem didn't exist, by the way. I'm going to keep coming back to that. So like if the AR problem wasn't so, if it wasn't so difficult, you know, and everything was reasonably paid all the time, then there wouldn't be as much pressure and stress on things. And you could do more with that, you know.
With that sales coordinator role, did you tell them, let's give this a try for 30, 90 days, or was it just...
We committed in that kind of example, we committed to it, but you know, we added like a little timer delay to make sure it was a good fit, you know, but, we pretty confident. I mean, there was quite a bit of experience there. So, I don't think we would have done it if we didn't have already seen signs of this person being a good teacher.
Those things always make me anxious because I'm like, shit, if they don't work, they're going to bounce. Or it's going to be awkward for me, or I'm going to have to find someone that is better, that's on top of it. Like, this is risky, but okay.
I was going to say, have you ever been wrong about an employee? Like, you know when you have a bad feeling about someone and you've hired them, and you're like, oh boy, I don't know if this is going to work out. Like, all right, we'll give it a shot. And then it doesn't work out.
Looking back, it's really easy to call out those moments. I'm not going to obviously get into specifics, but there's definitely been times where I'm like, I don't know, but oh, the resume is so good. But then there's like this thing and I don't know. And then we kind of put it off. And then they were like really thorough on following up. And I go, that never happens anymore. I swear to God, like I'm surprised when somebody follows up after an interview these days. I'm like, and I'm just like, oh, I don't know. Let's wing it. Let's see what happens. And then it turns out like, oh yeah, this person is completely dramatic and all this stuff's always happening and, you know, like problematic stuff, you know? So it has definitely happened before. And then there's definitely been times where in hindsight I go, yeah, maybe we overcorrected there.
Do you have any good interview tricks that you found to help sift through people?
You know what's interesting? We've gone full circle from like, go with our gut, talk to these people, feel them out. Do they get it? You know, do they feel like lifers, that kind of thing, to the point where I'm like, when you're replacing, I don't know, whatever role, right? Let's call it more of an inside like computer, like admin or like, you know, administrative kind of role, or like even just higher level management, assistant management. I look and I go, man, I wish you could ask questions to determine if someone's going to turn out to be like a sociopath or like a toxic person, which of course you can't, because typically those people who are like that are really good liars. So what I found myself doing is going away from gut and literally like I'll use Claude or whatever and I'll say, hey, I am trying, here's a list of everyone who's in this meeting or this I'm going to call it a committee, we don't actually call it that, but it's a committee of people about this hire. Here's what we're all afraid of. Help us come up with questions that literally help me pull this out of the interview. And more importantly, not just the question, I'll say, now give me what kind of response, give me three types of responses they might give or vibes and why I don't want that and what I do want. So three and three, right? And it'll give it to me. It's a lot and you're kind of looking at it, right? And you say, I want the whole interview not to last more than 40 minutes or something. And then you can kind of like comb through it. And don't get me wrong, like I'll see something bad in the interview and I'll be like, well, Claude, but they might've been nervous. It's like, maybe. Or maybe they just don't think and they can't come up with stuff the way you want them to and you shouldn't hire them. And I'm like, but they were so good. Like, you know, you can't shake that gut instinct, you know?
And that's actually an interesting idea is if I could record an interview and the audio and feed it in to see if, did I miss anything from this or should I have elaborated or asked more questions?
Dude, just create AI Bruce that just does video interviews with people and then...
I don't know if it's there fully to synthesize... you know, and get those feelings yet, but we would rate people. So, you know, this was always tough, right? Is your gut feeling versus non-gut in terms of interviewing and trying to reduce the risk of them not making it work. But we had maybe four or five different characteristics that we were trying to rate people on that we determined beforehand, you know, whatever was really specific for the role, not stupid high level stuff like, you know, hard work or whatever. But really, really like, okay, if it was communication was the most important because they're client facing, then that would be something that we would ask very, or we would test them. We would lean on them harder. We would kind of frustrate them. We would cut them off a bit. We would see how they respond back. We would see how did they email back? How did they write stuff? Maybe a written-based project responding to a customer request.
Do you notice that, like, okay, we don't all have these, like, glorified HR teams that can recruit really, really well. Do you notice that our employees are not good interviewers because they're just desperately trying to fit and hire for the role?
Dude, I think the opposite actually, at least maybe your size is different. Back when we were 25 to 30, I would say I was the desperate person and they were my double check to say, they're okay.
Lately, people that when I haven't been part of the interview process, we've botched it.
How big is the sample size on that statement? like, because could it just be a string of bad luck?
It could be a string of bad luck, but like a hire that we should have gotten that we didn't, that I didn't closely monitor as tight. And it's like, come on, we're better than that. Or a hire that we made that we didn't just thoroughly do a good interview process and we rushed it. And then their leaders come to me and go, it's not working out. I'm like, okay, fire them. And literally this happened like a month ago and our CFO at Watson and we're like, they're like, who's going to fire him? I'm like, you are. Are you going to be there? No.
I don't know them.
Fire them. You hired them. Fire them.
We definitely had like, so there are some things like, so my little trick that I've done recently is like, and it depends on the information you have available. Right. But what I'll try to do is craft questions where like I try to get them to talk a little trash about their previous job so I can kind of feel out like what is up with this person, what kind of person are they, right? And it works, like at least the way I do it. Like I'm able to unlock that in people when I talk to them because to me it helps them feel like they can be honest. And when they can be honest, I can get an idea. And then all of a sudden I start getting a story about what actually happened at the old place. And it helps you think, well, what happens here that might – you know, trigger this person or make them, or what do we, is that something we want to deal with, you know,
which I know sounds kind of strange. Do you remember a specific question about that that helps sift that out?
Yeah. Like, well, not specifically, but maybe more like, okay, so you're looking for a job, but you also just told me that you left this place 2 months ago. Most people don't, leave until they have something else lined up. What happened there? You can be honest. Like, I get it. You know, and then all of a sudden stuff starts pouring out as I kind of keep drilling. Well, there was actually this thing that went down and I didn't really like what was happening. And I was just like, you know what? I just want to find a better place. And then I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. So was it like issues of management or whatever? You just kind of like keep kind of seeing until you can figure it out, you know? And
I noticed that too. But I noticed that that is those resume, we'll call it jumps or something, is not... It is fairly common though. And so figuring out the why, as in if someone blames management, I find that as a bit of a red flag versus something was up with the business or whatever, to sit, you know, and we didn't jive, or, you know, I didn't like this or whatever happened, or the business wasn't doing too well. That's more on the fine side of me. But yeah, if someone starts complaining about their manager, that's when and maybe that was true, but that's when I red flag.
Then what really sucks is I'm like, well, you know, then you start worrying like, oh man, there's this thing. And then I go, I'm the one who like forced this topic. Like, they weren't trying to complain. I like pulled it out of them. And then I wonder, like, I don't know, did the whole thing backfire, which is a downside, but at least you can try to get a vibe for what's going on, for better or for worse. But yeah, that one, I did walk out of that going, oh, I walked out like feeling kind of, I don't know. And then I go, but nobody was going to bring it up until I forced the issue. So
wrapping up here, if you were to advise someone that's hiring the first or second employee, what would you say to them?
I wouldn't hire a friend. Dude, this company was built on us hiring our friends. So trust me, I understand. But you know what's really hard to do? Like, be professional with a friend, you know? Just try hiring a sibling or brother or whatever. Good luck, man. Like, it's just like, it's not that, I get the loyalty is there. But I'm telling you, man, like, you find yourself when it's bad, you go, I wonder if I could have taught somebody else how to do that, you know? And I'm not saying that I have problems hiring people I know now, but.
Do you mean hiring friends in leadership roles, or like bottom of the, like, I need you to fold shirts?
Well, I guess his first or second employee. Yeah. So early on, not in the leadership yet.
I don't know. I have two of my closest friends working with me, and they're the only human beings that can balance me out. Like, I trust them.
I mean, my partners would say the same about me as partners, you know. I think we all kind of bring different things to the table. But I just think if somebody's asking, who should I hire? I mean, there's a million other questions I would ask to drill down on it, you know. But I don't know what kind of job it is. In this hypothetical, Bruce, what role, what am I doing? Is it a print shop? Because if so, you're looking for someone to do like basic work. Is it sales? I don't know, man. Trust me, we built this whole place off friends. We started it as friends. We hired as friends. And I've seen the good parts of it, the bad parts of it. Loyalty comes from friends, you know? But I've also seen friends embezzle money. I've seen everything, you know? So you never know. Strangers, it's a roll of the dice. We always want to hire people who we know through our networks. But then sometimes you create like this, I don't know, self-fulfilling prophecy of styles of people and behavior, you know? So who knows?
Jared at AKT, thank you so much for coming back on the show. I always like our conversations because they end up in a totally different spot than what I thought, which is the best. Brent Elsers, thank you guys for joining us on this week's episode. Have a great week. We'll see you in the next one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.